This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 9th at 11:03 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like Prince Harry and Meghan Markle did this week, politicians will start saying, "I'm leaving my family to spend more time at work."
Such heroes. Let's talk politics. This is Snelly Goster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and those shrewd politicians or snollygosters who try to convince voters to support them. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up later in the podcast, connecting perennial football losing with medical marijuana.
Makes sense. But first, we're a little less than 10 weeks away from Ohio's primary election. Really got here quickly. The primary is March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. The Ohio Secretary of State's office has certified the candidates who will be on the ballot in the presidential race. All the major candidates are there, but a few had trouble with directions and did not make it.
First to the candidates who are on the ballot. On the Republican side, President Trump. He will be on the Ohio primary ballot. No surprise there. On the Democratic side, in alphabetical order, Michael Bennett, Joe Biden, Michael Bloomberg, Cory Booker, and Pete Buttigieg. God, there's a lot of B names in that. A lot of B names in this list. Yeah. Also, Tulsi Gabbard, Amy Klobuchar, Deval Patrick, Bernie Sanders, another B name, Tom Steyer, and Elizabeth Warren.
That is a pretty full ballot. A few notables, as we said, collected signatures, but did not meet the letter of the law here in Ohio, and thus were left off the ballot. First to who would have been President Trump's only Republican competition, Bill Weld, Mike's guy from back in Massachusetts.
Former governor.
Yeah, his petitions lacked a list of authorized delegates, as well as the consent of any delegates to use his name, so no primary challenge to President Trump here in Ohio.
Democrat John Delaney, the former congressman from Maryland, failed to formally declare his candidacy on the petitions, as the law requires. And Andrew Yang, his Yang gang, collected signatures on forms that did not include his declaration of candidacy. Yang quickly filed to be a write-in candidate, however.
Here to discuss the upcoming primaries and caucuses is longtime Democratic strategist Derek Clay. Derek, welcome to Snollygoster.
Hey, welcome, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. So you ran Al Gore's campaign here in Ohio back in 2000. You are familiar with the rules to get candidates on the ballot. How hard is it to get a presidential candidate on the ballot here in Ohio? And I guess, are you surprised that John Delaney and specifically Andrew Yang, even a bigger name, didn't make it?
Yeah, I very surprised. I mean, you know, it's the statement that came out from the Secretary of State that was released on Saturday said that Andrew Yang, of course, failed to qualify because his petitions were not submitted, complete with a statement from the candidate stating their intention to run. Now, that's according to Yang's campaign, but, you know, it's not that hard to get on the ballot here in Ohio. And the mere fact that these guys did not make the ballot is a little baffling to me.
Yeah, I mean, we joked that, you know, Andrew Yang supporters wear hats that say math. Maybe we should have ones hats that say read. You know, read the directions.
Too much time on STEM. They should actually hit the books.
Yeah, I mean, because the Yang gang was active out there. I know we had a politics and a pine event back in, I think it was late last year in the fall, and I think it was November. And there were Yang supporters at that event collecting signatures. Also, folks from other candidates' campaigns as well collecting signatures to get their candidates on the ballot. So this really was just, you know, it's a technicality, but, you know, 11, 12 other candidates managed to do it correctly.
This is their
right.
Job.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you can't get your ballots right to run for president, then I don't know if you deserve to be on that ballot. You know, like you said, a number of other candidates were able to do it. And including some candidates that are new to the game, like Michael Bloomberg. Well, Michael Bloomberg, he can get on any ballot because he's got all more money and got out of here. But Deval Patrick, you know, was another one that was new to the game and was able to get on the ballot just fine.
Yeah, and Andrew Yang, money's not really an issue for him. It is just somebody messed up there. Okay, enough of the weedy world of election law. We are in the presidential election year, finally. Seems like it's taken forever to get here. We're in 2020, the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary just weeks away. There's another Democratic debate coming up next week in Iowa. Derek, now that we've turned the page into January 2020, how do you see the Democratic race for president shaping up right now?
Well, if you look at a number of the polls that are across the country, Biden still is the front runner, and he leads with an average spread of about 9 points. So right now, you know, and this is as of 1-9-2020, you got Biden at about close to 30% of the vote. You got Sanders at 20%, Warren at 14%, Buttigieg at 7.5%, Bloomberg at 5.8%, Yang at 3.5%, Klobuchar 2.8%. Gabbard is at 2, Steyer, Booker, and on and so forth. So, you know, I think that Biden is still in the best position to win the Democratic primary. It's not over by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, anything can happen between now and primary day here in Ohio. But Biden seems to resonate with Democratic voters across the country.
I have to think the events of the past week with Iran has to help Joe Biden. Guy who has foreign policy experience, was vice president for, you know, 8 years. I would bet that would definitely help him with regards to, say, someone like even Pete Buttigieg, who doesn't have any national experience.
Absolutely. I mean, in times of conflict and war, you know, the citizens of our country really want somebody that has experience. And, you know, Biden has been a U.S. senator for decades and had the experience of vice president. So he's familiar with the process and how things go. And then not only that, the even temperament of the former vice president is something that I think is definitely going to be in his favor moving forward.
You know, when you hear Bernie Sanders, as Yogi Berra would say, it seems like deja vu all over again. Some people are talking about a block Bernie movement. And, you know, the DNC rightfully took a lot of criticism in 2016 for what happened there. Do you think that this block Bernie movement could be a good idea? Do you think it's wise? Do you think Bernie is too divisive for the general election? Or where would you come down on any potential block Bernie movement for 2020?
You know, I think as a democracy, we shouldn't be trying to block anybody. I mean, if Bernie Sanders wants to run and he has followers, then he should be able to run. And whoever is the best person, they should be able to the best person should be able to win this primary. So I'm not for any type of block Bernie movement or any type of movement to block anybody that wants to run for public office. That's what makes our country so great.
Where's the line between an aggressive primary campaign and being labeled as a anti-Bernie candidate? Let's use him. Let's use this example. Where's the line between a good aggressive primary campaign and a blocking campaign?
Well, I think that anytime you make things personal, then that sort of the line drawn for me. But you know, because we have such bad campaign finance laws. You know, you can spend as much money as you want to defeat your opponent, and so I think that, you know, Biden and some of these other candidates have their work cut out for them, but at the end of the day, I think that Biden is still going to come out on top.
Derek, you ran Al Gore's campaign here in Ohio in 2000. What are these campaigns doing right now? Try to give us a behind-the-scenes look at, you know, we still have a lot of Democratic campaigns going here in Ohio, something like 11 that are going to be on the ballot coming up. What are they doing right now? What's taking up their time?
Well, I can tell you for the Democratic campaigns, they are they're raising as much money as they can, that's for sure. And the national campaign is primarily responsible for that, but each individual state will eventually have their own campaign team, which will consist of like a campaign manager, a field director, a finance director, communications person. But right now, you know, take for instance Bloomberg. Bloomberg has 60 staffers here in the state. Now, Bloomberg just declared his candidacy, a month or so ago, but he has the money to make sure that, that his campaign is fully staffed. So he has like 60 staffers here. He's got 13 field offices. He's got two here in Columbus alone, and he's already hired a director for his campaign. So that's not the norm for a lot of these candidates that are running on the Democratic side of the aisle. But a candidate like a Bloomberg who has to ramp up quickly, get their name recognition in, and get a field operation in quickly, that's the types of things that they're doing right now.
Yeah, and unlike the other campaigns, Bloomberg's really not focused on New Hampshire and Iowa. I think a lot of campaigns, they're really focused on those first two, even South Carolina and Nevada. Bloomberg's really targeting Super Tuesday, and if he does well there, then the ones like Ohio that are later in March.
Right, because he understands the relevance of Ohio. I mean, if you don't win Ohio, you're not going to win the election.
Do you think he realistically has a chance? You mentioned the poll numbers, you know, and he's creeping up a bit. He's still at 5, but, you know, he started out at like 1 or 2, and he's jumped up, you know, a couple of points in just the past several weeks. A lot of those ads on TV are probably helping.
Yeah, you got to keep in context that he just jumped in the race. That's why his poll numbers are so low right now. I still don't believe that he is going to be able to pull out the nomination. But who knows? I mean, he's got a good director on the ground here. I know Aaron Pickle very well. He ran the Obama campaign in 2008, and he's very capable. So who knows what will happen here in the state. But I think that Bloomberg's numbers will continue to rise, especially when some of these other candidates, like, for instance, a Tulsi Gabbard or a Klobuchar will eventually drop out of the race.
You say that you don't think he can win the nomination. Why is that? Is he just too late to the game, or is there another reason?
I think that Biden has the most trust among voters across the country on the Democratic side. It's not to say that Bloomberg doesn't have trusted voters, but you know, Bloomberg has never been on the national stage in terms of being in the presidency or the executive office. You know, Joe Biden was in a part of the Obama administration for 8 years. So that machine has been going on continuously since he left office, right? So those are the folks that he can tap into automatically, whereas Bloomberg is going to have to go out and establish these relationships in other areas of the country.
Derek, we keep hearing the suburbs are the key to winning Ohio. Joe Ingles, our colleague at the Ohio State House News Bureau, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau, did a story this week. Do you see it that way? Can the Democratic nominee win the suburbs by even more than Democrats did in 2016 and 2018? And is that enough to make Ohio turn blue again?
I do believe that the suburbs are the key, and this is the reason why. Hillary Clinton didn't talk to any of the suburban communities at all. I mean, she focused her concentration, at least here in Ohio, on the metropolitan areas. And I've been saying this forever. You can't win elections in Ohio if you're just talking to the major municipalities in the state. You have to talk to rural voters. You have to talk to suburban voters. And you're not going to win them all, but you may be able to convince a few of them. The reason why President Trump won the state is because he was out there talking to folks that weren't necessarily in his base. You know, the auto workers that felt that they've been left behind. You know, blue-collar workers in this state that felt like the Democratic Party has not been talking to them. Those are the folks that went out and voted for Trump, because he was talking to him. Now, whether he meant everything that he said or he's delivering on everything that he promised in his campaign, that remains to be seen. But he has been talking to folks that aren't traditionally in his base, and we as a Democratic Party have to do that.
You know, when we talk about politics, you have to bring up money. As you said, right, all the candidates are out there trying to raise money right now. The president has a lot more money than Democratic challengers, maybe any of them except Bloomberg, maybe Tom Steyer as well, maybe. Is money always the deciding factor? I mean, it certainly wasn't in 2016 when Hillary raised nearly double what Donald Trump did 4 years ago. Just how important is money? I mean, isn't there always enough money from either side, or where do you come down on that?
Well, money is important when you're trying to get your message out, when you're trying to get more field workers in the field to knock on doors for you. But the bottom line is voters are not stupid. Voters want somebody that they can feel good about. Trust mostly, because I will say that most voters don't trust politicians. But the bottom line is you got to have some character. If you don't have character, if people don't have a good feeling about you, you can have all the money in the world and they're not going to vote for you.
Derek Clay, longtime Democratic strategist. Thanks for joining us here on Snollygoster.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks, guys, for having me.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media. Time now for our namesake award, the Snollygoster of the Week. We don't know the person's name, but he or she is apparently a football fan, or at least a fan of terrible teams.
Long-suffering Ohio football fan, I'm guessing, because first, we have to give credit to Jackie Borchard from the Cincinnati Inquirer for this story. She reports that an unnamed person has filed a petition with the Ohio Medical Board to make, quote, Bengals-Browns fans an official condition that would grant access to medical marijuana.
Chronic pain, also something familiar to Bengals and Browns fan, that is a qualified condition for getting a medical marijuana permit right now, but right now, not Bengals and Browns.
I don't think the chronic pain felt by
it's
Bengals
not the
and
same,
Browns
it's not the
fan.
Same chronic pain.
It's not the same chronic pain that qualifies you as a recipient of medical marijuana.
I'm not sure. As a lifelong Browns fan, I might disagree, but I certainly, this is filed tongue-in-cheek. There's no way this is getting approved. But it did make the rounds this week. It was picked up by a lot of news outlets.
Yeah.
Credit to Jackie Borchard.
Yes, and to this unnamed applicant. He or she deserves credit. And that's why this supporter of Bengals-Browns fandom as a condition for medical marijuana, you are our Snollygoster of the Week.
You know, if you go to the Cleveland Muni lot, the main tailgate lot, you would think—
I've been to that
lot. You would think alcohol is required to be a Browns fan. But it's not, actually.
It's
who
not,
knew?
But
who knew?
Lots of it.
If you have a suggestion for next week's Snollygoster of the Week award, that might be hard to top, but please send it anyway. You can email it to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes, and as always, tell your friends about us. Until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.
Mayfield, pump fake, fires downfield, and it is intercepted. It was looking for Callaway.